Take us, God, just as we are. You are summoning out all that we shall be. You are setting your seal, your blessing, your grace, your healing, your forgiveness, your fullness upon our hearts. Thank you for living in us. May we live in you. Amen. We closed last evening sharing about angels. I was sharing about angels in my life, people who have come into my life and blessed me in special ways and brought forth things in me that I didn't really know were in me. And I wanted just to invite us to be quiet for a moment and ponder the angels that have been in our own life. Would you please just close your eyes and just for a minute or two, ponder angels in your life. And I'd like to invite you, if you are so guided, to speak the name of your angel, angels, if you would like. We give you deepest thanks, dear God, for these precious angels in our lives. We give them gratitude in spirit. We give them gratitude in person. And we thank you for blessing us through them. Amen. I wanted to talk just for a minute about some angels that have been in our son's life, because I know we have some high school and college age youth here, and these were very important angels for our whole family. He went to college for a year and a half and realized he was supposed to choose a major after a year and a half. He had no idea what he wanted to major in. So he came home, and he decided, I remember this day very well, he decided to get on a train. He dyed his blonde hair black. He dyed his little blonde mustache black as it could get. Got on the train and went to New York City. And it was a very courageous thing to do. He had one night arranged in a hostel, and then he was open to what was before him. So he did find an apartment share the second day and got a room in an apartment. And then he went about job hunting. And that was a little complicated for a 19-year-old in New York City. He looked in, you know, Craigslist and I don't know what it was in that day, but finally he called upon a friend that had said to him, you know, I work at Johnny Rockets in the restaurant over in Hoboken, New Jersey, and if you can't find anything else, give me a call. So he gave her a call. This is a very kind of introverted young man. By the way, I asked his permission to share these stories, so this is with his permission. So Carl became a waiter for a year at Johnny Rockets. And if it was somebody's birthday, a customer's birthday, all the wait staff gathered around and sang happy birthday and did a little dance. I wish I could have seen Carl doing this because I can't even imagine it. But anyway, so he did that for a year. Then it happened that one of my adult piano students asked me, how's Carl doing in New York? So I told him what Carl was doing, and Tom said, well, you know, I have a friend who started a business called Top Notch Productions, and he just might have openings. He's in New York City, and I said, wow, what do they do? They make productions, and he said, well, they do strike downs and setups for events like Cirque du Soleil and sports things happening and sometimes some TV sets. And long and short of it is, put Carl in touch with this fellow, and Carl got hired by Top Notch Productions. And we consider angels in Carl's life. First of all, Victoria, who worked at Johnny Rockets, which was not his first choice, but it was something to help him support himself. And then working with Top Notch. He said, recently we were talking about this, the best gig he had with Top Notch was on Sunday mornings, I think it was at 6 a.m., on a corner bordering Central Park, there was a sportscaster who was broadcasting sports news. So it was every Sunday morning at 6 a.m., I think it was for 1 hour, and so Carl got and set up the sound system and lights and all that, and he got $150 every every Sunday morning when he did that. He said, that would have paid my rent. You know, that alone paid my rent. So these are angels. He was sharing. So these were great angels in his life. Then after 2 years, he came back to San Francisco, floundered a little bit, kind of moved back into the house, kind of got into the old patterns of mom cooking and, you know, putting the laundry pile here. And Dennis and I realized this didn't seem like progress. This seemed like regression. So anyway, we decided to assist him in finding a room someplace. And he chose a place in San Francisco, and we helped assist with the rent for a few months. And while he pondered the next step for his life and his independence. Actually, during that period, he took a class at City College, and it was an evening class. It was on speech, because he knew wherever he went to school, he was going to have to take a speech class. Speech for an introvert is panic, but he decided to try to get it out of the way. Well, this was a fabulous class because it was in the evening, so it drew people from all ages. and all stories. And they had to speak about their lives, kind of like CFO. They were telling stories about their lives. He learned about people who had been imprisoned, people who'd been in war, women who'd been raped, people who'd been accosted. And he said it was just one of the most fascinating experience that he'd had in all of his college life. So then it came time to think about the next step. And he did some research and decided to go to Humboldt State, which is in Northern California, up in Arcata. And school was about to start, and he didn't really know what he wanted to major in. He didn't have a place to live. He said, I'll just take my tent and take my sleeping bag, and I can camp. I don't have to find a place to live. I can camp. So we packed up the car and drove him up there, and I think this was a Friday. Well, let me get this straight now. Yeah, we walked around town, looked at billboards for rooms for rent and apartments to rent. He called a few things. It wasn't going to work out. Most things were filled up by this time, and so we kind of set that aside, and then we drove to the campus. He had never been to the campus. So by this time, I was tired. I was discouraged. I just said to Dennis and Carl, I'm going to hang out in the car a little bit and just relax. And actually, I had my guitar there. So I just relaxed with my guitar. And they went about on the campus. It was about 5 o'clock. You know, all the offices were closed by this time. Well, they walked by the administration office, the admissions office, and a young man inside saw them try the door, and he came to the door. It was locked. It was after hours, and he said, can I be of any help to you? And so Dennis and Carl told him why they were on campus. Well, he said, well, come on in. He talked with Carl about what are your interests, what are your skills, what are your goals, what vision do you have for yourself for the future? And this young man helped Carl get a focus. This was just like a 45-minute conversation, helped him focus. This fellow said, you know, we have a major here called Environmental Resources Engineering, because Carl was interested in the sciences, interested in the environment. And that's the first time Carl ever heard that title. And this young man said, next week you can meet the department chair. She's really dynamite. You're going to love her. And Dennis and Carl came back like, wow, got a major, got a potential major. It was great. So that was such a relief. So we kind of celebrated, walked around town. I think we went out and got something to eat. Found out that the campground was 10 miles away. We did have his bike, but it would have been, if he was staying at the campground to go to school, he'd be riding his bike on a busy street. And so we just we didn't know what to do. So we just started walking down one of the residential streets. And as we were walking, this man, no shirt, sweatpants, barefoot, came running across the street, running like this. And he said, look, look! And he had this little frog in his hand. Isn't this a beautiful frog? We said, yeah, it's a beautiful frog. You know, very, very nice frog. And he looked at us and said, what are you doing walking along this street? We said, well, we kind of told him the story. And he looked at us and looked at Carl, and we looked at him. And he said, well, you know, I've got a room full of junk here that I've had students live in before. And I mean, if you're really up a creek, he looked at Carl and said, you could clean this room out and, you know, you could stay there for a while if you want. I didn't have the courage to go in the house. Oh, I'm such a softie. didn't have my guitar with me at that moment. But anyway, so Dennis and Carl went in the house, and Dennis described walking in this little living room, and there were two upright pianos in this little tiny living room, and there were telephone numbers written all over the walls in the living room. And so, but anyway, this fellow Steve, invited Carl to stay. Carl cleaned out the room and lived there for one semester. During the first semester, he met friends, and after that, he had roommates. But so I was asking Carl recently to reflect on this, and he said, Steve was the sweetest man you can imagine. He had just been through a very difficult divorce. He was grieving. He was drinking. He was struggling in some ways. But Carl felt like it was the right thing for both of them to be together at that moment in time. So Steve, with the frog in his hands, was another angel for Carl. So I just wanted to kind of share that with, especially with some of the young folks around, because you never know. You know, you just don't know what God has in store for you. And sometimes it happens very serendipitously, as it did with Carl. So, we have angels, and we are angels. And I'm sure if you think about your own life, you can think of times when you served and you contributed to somebody else's life. You served and welcomed someone, gave them an idea about something. And so we are angels. So we can go forth in our lives being open to that possibility. God, I just use the term angel. I want to serve. I want to serve you, God. I want to serve your children. And wherever I am, if there's any way that you can use me, please go right ahead. We were in a restaurant one time, and I think Dennis and I were just there by ourselves. There were other tables. Oh, I had taught fifth and sixth grade, and one of the things we taught was the Heimlich maneuver. Do you know the Heimlich maneuver? I just read that Mr. Heimlich, at 87 years old himself, in the senior community where he lives, saw a woman over there choking on a bit of hamburger, ran over and gave her the Heimlich procedure. That piece of hamburger popped out, so even Mr. Heimlich is still doing it. But anyway, we had taught this to our fifth and sixth graders because we thought that was very important information. And we even had a dummy that we practiced on each other. But anyway, so we're in this restaurant, and I saw this woman at a nearby table. I just, without even thinking, I just jumped up, went behind her chair, gave her the Heimlich. That piece of food flew out, and, you know, we were all kind of like in shock. She didn't know what to say. Nobody at her table knew what to say, and I just went back to my... snuck back to my table. You know, sometimes the angels just have to go for it. They can't be too subtle. Anyway, afterwards, as she was leaving, she leaned down and thanked me, and she said she's a nurse herself, and she knew about the Heimlich procedure. But, you know, you can actually do it to yourself. Raise your hand if you don't know about the Heimlich procedure. Oh, good. You've had good teachers. Okay, so anyway, was a nurse herself, and she really thanked me for having the boldness to get up and do that. When I was living in half, I'm just sharing some of my angel stories now about how I was an angel. One more. When I was living in Half Moon Bay for 1 year, I would still be there if I hadn't met Dennis and married him, because I loved Half Moon Bay, down the coast from San Francisco. I had an apartment, and it was right on the ocean, just a little street between my unit and the ocean. And so I was asleep. It was early in the morning. And something woke me up. And it was this little voice, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy." I thought, what am I hearing? And then I realized it was a child's voice. And I jumped up, I put on my slippers and my bathrobe. I went outside, it was foggy like it often was there. Where was Daddy? Where was this voice coming from? Here comes this little boy, he must have been like 4 years old, walking down this foggy street all by himself. And I came up to him and I knelt down and I said, "Can I help you? I'm looking for my daddy." And I said, "Well, where do you live?" "Oh, I live back there, but my daddy wasn't there." And I said, "Well," I just picked him up. I said, let's go back there and we'll see if we can find him. So it was just like 6 or 8 properties down the way. So I carried this sweet little boy down there. And he guided me back to this little trailer behind a house. It was very neat in there, but Daddy wasn't there. And so I wrote a note, and I told him where his little boy was. I gave him my phone number, and I carried the little boy back home, made some hot chocolate. And just in a few minutes, the phone rang, and it was Daddy. And he said, "I'll be right there." And he came right down. He just, you know, picked his arm, put his arms around his son. The little boy's crying, "Daddy, Daddy, where were you? Where were you?" And the daddy said, "Honey, you know that every morning I go into the house to take my shower. I just go in for a minute and then I come right back." "I forgot. I forgot. I couldn't find you." And it was just such a precious little moment. And so, you know, we're all angels waiting. We're angels in waiting, how about that? Also, one of the aspects of my life that I really treasure is I am happy to talk on the telephone. I like telephones, and I have friends hither and yon when we can't get together very often, and we have long phone conversations, and it's kind of a ministry we have with each other to take that time, set it apart, and have these special conversations. So I just encourage you all to be the angels that you are and look around you and listen around you and see where those needs rise up, because we are all angels. So, Dana, when I got to know Del Anderson and started working with him, he was past president of CFO International, and he would get all these letters, and I'd be filing things for him. He wasn't very well organized, but his helpers kept him well organized. I remember he told me that camps farthest out does not translate very well into German. Camps farthest out. Can you imagine trying to translate that into German? Does anybody know German? How would you translate camps farthest out? Okay, okay. So the translation, or how they put it, is Liebe, Leben, Lernen. Liebe, Leben, Lernen. Learning to live love. I love that. To me, that really says what we're all about. What JFO, CFO is about. We're learning to live love. Do the camps in Switzerland still call themselves Leben Lernen? Okay, good. Don't you think that's great? I think it describes CFO so well. So I was teaching, it was 1974 and 1975, and I had never heard of CFO. And my friend Enid, does anyone remember her name from a former talk? We used to sing duets together in church. We were very close friends from junior high school. She was a year ahead of me. She got her teaching credential before I got mine, and I had taken some time out to work besides. And so, anyway, She got me a job in her school district, I'll just say that. She called me one day and she said, because I was teaching preschool music with Yamaha Music School because I couldn't get a teaching job. So I was doing preschool music, and she called me one day and she said, "Marsh, they just posted something on the teacher's room board today. It's your job. I know it's your job." It was for a sabbatical replacement for a classroom music teacher. It was for one semester. So I called, I interviewed. Actually, my preschool music teaching helped me get that job because I was going to be teaching classroom music from kindergarten up to sixth grade, 8 different schools every week. You know, a morning here, a morning there, drive around. It was in Millbrae, a small town. Anyway, it was a wonderful semester, and then everybody knew me. You know, all the principals knew me because I was in their school, so by the time the next semester rolled around, I had a couple of job offers, and I took one. I took one at Enid's school, actually. And so this is one morning. I drive into the parking lot. It's about 10 to 8 in the morning, and she's in her car, and she went. So I got in her car with her, and she was listening to the radio. And it was a very warm, welcoming message and voice. This was the hour of prayer from Lakeshore Avenue Baptist Church in Oakland, California. And the minister was Rodney Romney. And every morning from 7:45 to 8, Rod had this radio show. It was so beautiful, a scripture, a little message and a prayer in 15 minutes. Well, also, so anyway, from that moment on my way to school every day from 7:45 to 8, I was listening to the hour of prayer. And I'd drive up and there was Enid in her car till 8 o'clock. Here, we had to be in our classrooms at 8 o'clock, but it's like 8:01. So anyway, and he read Glenn Clark books. He talked about CFO on the radio. And I had never heard of it. I started reading some Glenn Clark books, and then in 1979, Rod announced that he was leaving Lakeshore, going up to Seattle, and I had been over a few times just to see who this voice was. So I decided those last few weeks I would go over to Lakeshore and be there. I wanted to hear his sermons and just be there with him because I was already fond of him. I hardly knew him. So I'm sitting there, and a woman sitting nearby leaned over to me, and she said, "Are you a CFOer?" And I said, that was funny. I said, "No, I'm not." And she said, "You are a CFOer. You just don't know it yet." And boy, was she right. She could read right through me. That was Claire Galalian. I don't know if any of you knew her, but... Who knew Claire? Oh, yeah. Okay, she was active in the first Saturday. Every first Saturday of the month, CFO had a retreat at Lakeshore from 10 to 4, and we covered the whole day, except for rest time. I really needed that. But from 10 to 4, the first Saturday of the month, and she invited me to come. She told me all about it. And Dennis and I went to that for many, many years. And gosh, I brought Carl there right when he was born, nursed him, and finally he got to be running around so much we needed to leave him at my mom's that day. But everybody just loved having Carl there, and that was my introduction to CFO. It was so wonderful. So I thank Enid for inviting me into her car that day. At one of those early meetings at the East Bay meetings, I told this story at Spirit in Action's, Tanya, where are you? Yeah, Spirit in Action's 20th anniversary gathering was recently. And so one of those first meetings at Lakeshore, I saw this tall, stately man. How many of you know Dell Anderson? Do you know him? Okay, quite a few, right. And Lucille, his wife, was with him, short, beautiful. And he stood up and said, we're having a labeling party at our house next Saturday for the CFO International newsletter, and we need a team of people to come and help us label. And I thought, well, maybe that's one way to get to know some of these crazy people. And so I thought, I think I'll go. So I went over to Del and Lucille's house, and gosh, the furniture was all moved out of their living room, and they had all these long tables set up, and there were probably 15 or 16 people there. Well, I'll tell you, they were not just labeling. They were praying for each person that they labeled. Every person was responsible for saying a prayer for the label that they put on. They were singing. They were laughing. They were praying. They were uplifting friends. It was a great introduction to CFO and to CFOI, because this is something I wanted to be part of. You know, I just felt like it was my call. So I feel like when Jesus said, "I come that you might have life and have it in all its fullness," I feel like this was really the beginning of a fullness of life for me that I hadn't had in my life prior to that, in such a way. I'd like to read something from "I Will Lift Up Mine Eyes," because this kind of applies to me and to my life, and to some of my associations. Glenn Clark says, "We hear a great deal about the value of prayer groups. Did you ever appreciate the value of love groups? Did you ever realize what miracles could happen if a little group of your friends would gather together once a day or even once a week and loved everyone that needed their help? Get your family or your group of friends together someday and try it. Instead of making a prayer list, make a love list. Turn in thought to each one in turn and love them without stint or limit." He goes on also to say, of course, to be prayerful. My life as it is now, I'm not part of a regular prayer group that meets. I'm part of a monthly group that meets. But I see my local friends more frequently than that. And on Mondays, I'm jamming with my little five of us, jamming guitars and instruments together, singing. And I realized when I read this, I was rereading "I Will Lift Up Mine Eyes," preparing for camp. When I read this, I thought, that's what we are on Mondays for each other. We don't just play music and sing music. We share with each other. Well, how's mom doing? You know, how's mom doing? How's that back pain that you've had? You know, you were talking about the fire at your neighbor's house last week. How did things turn out there? Is there anything they need? This is a fivesome of people who would not call prayer an activity in their lives necessarily, but they are living loving kindness, living it with one another, with their communities, with their families. And I don't know if you find yourself in this situation, but I often do, where I'm with people that I love dearly, they love me dearly, but we have a different language for speaking our spiritual truth. And they all know where I am. They know that I'm here speaking to you about my spiritual journey and God's power in my life. And they're kind of like, you know, she has a different language than we have. But really, when I read this about love groups, I thought, this is something that relates to my life. Because I'm not one to impose my spiritual views or beliefs on the people around me. I mean, I'm part of church situations and all that, where that is part of my life. But I also have a deep respect for people in my life who are living, they have learned to live love. They are living love for me, for themselves, for their communities. We talk about the world. We're uplifting the world, even though we're not, we're loving the world. So I just want to open this possibility of honoring these little groups, these same with my family group. You know, they might ask me to say a prayer at the beginning of Thanksgiving dinner, which of course I'm happy to do, or someone else in the family. But we are sharing love. We are learning to live love with one another and within our communities that are gathered. So I wanted to share that with you. When I got home from my, once a month, we are part of a group called the Sun Magazine Group. Does anyone know about the Sun Magazine? It's not S-O-N, it's S-U-N. It's a magazine, it's a creative magazine of many of the writers are first-time writers or poets or photographers, and they have lovely articles, thought-provoking poetry, and like the last article was, the last primary article was all about psychotherapy. And its place in our lives. And anyway, this is another example of a group of people. We're together and we're sharing from our hearts and from our lives in a very real and deep way as we talk about the magazine. And also, it's a love group. It's a love group for me. We met a young couple at the Episcopal Church who really took to us. They're, 10 or 15 years younger than we are, and they took to us. And they actually approached us about having a small group together, not related to the church, but a small group. And we were interested, and then it turns out they knew the Silverthorns. Some of you know Wendy and Terry Silverthorne. They knew them through musical events that Wendy was leading in Placerville, where we live. And so we thought that would be a nice inclusion because we all knew each other. And then another JFO family, the Shones. Anyway, the four of us get together, the four couples get together monthly. We just finished reading Richard Rohr's Falling Upward. So we call ourselves the FUG group, Falling Upward group. And we have a sharing time, a prayer time, and then a discussion time. My point is this. Go home and create what you need in your life. Create what you're longing for in your life. After my first CFO camp, I went back to my church and helped start a prayer group that met for 10 years. It was sacred. So we're going to be leaving this beautiful camp at the end of the week and prayerful with each other and some counseling members. Don't be shy about going home and thinking to yourself, what do I need to sustain this living, learning to live love? How can I bring this into my life more fully? I encourage you to do that. Let's bow our heads. Liebe, Leben, Lernen. We thank you, God. Thank you for sending your Son, Jesus, who modeled and taught for us how to live love, how to be love, how to join with you in spirit and in intention. To be love, love in our communities, uplifting our world in love, uplifting our cosmos in love, building bridges between traditions, traditions of loving kindness. May we continue vibrantly as we grow in love. With gratitude, I pray, God. Amen.
So there's a favorite old rhythm from Winnie that we do. You get a partner, stand up and hold your partner's hands, look them in the eye. And it's a way of living love.
Right.
It's the way I learned to live love here when I was small. Anybody find a partner? You might notice someone off to the side who doesn't have a partner yet. Now, one person goes first, decide who's going first, and the other person, you really need to listen. Look in their eyes and really listen and let it soak in. And the person going first, repeat after me. I like you just the way you are.
I like you just the way you are.
Exactly and precisely.
Exactly and precisely.
I think you turned out nicely.
I think you turned out nicely.
And now the other person say it, and if you're being spoken to, you really need to listen and let it soak in all the way to your heart. I like you just the way you are.
I like you just the way you are.
Exactly and precisely.
Exactly and precisely.
I think you turned out nicely.
I think you turned out nicely.
And that's the prelude to marching in the kingdom. I'm with you and you're with me, and so we are all together, so we are all together, so we are all together. I'm with you and you're with me, and so we are all together as we march along. Take your partner to the rhythms field.